In this lesson, we're going to focus on network address translation. So a bit of theory on this. What exactly is network address translation? Well, in a word, it is lying. What are we lying about? We're lying about the IP address and or ports involved for a host. We're mapping IP addresses and or ports for the benefit of network communication. Maybe we have a private RFC 1918 network on the inside, and we want to map it to a global on the outside. That would be one of many reasons to use NAT. The glory of this thing is on the ASA, there's only three commands we're going to implement. There's the NAT statement, the global statement, and the static statement. We're going to take a look at each one of those, plus various permutations that you can use with those three commands to make NAT happen exactly as you need to inside of your security lab. In this section, we're going to focus on the routed mode firewall. With version 8 of the ASA code, we can also do NAT on a transparent mode firewall. And we'll save the NAT discussion for transparent mode for the transparent layer 2 firewall section coming up later. There's five basic NAT types that we're going to talk about in this lesson today. We have dynamic NAT, we have PAT, static NAT, static PAT, and my good old friend, NAT zero. We're going to take a look at each one of those and the syntax for each one and the caveats in order, starting with dynamic NAT first. Dynamic NAT simply takes one or more real IP addresses that are owned by hosts and translates them to one or more real addresses that are mappable or globally reachable on the other side of your firewall. And it's called dynamic NAT because it's simply translation rules that are in place that only take effect when traffic tries to course through the interfaces of your ASA. The syntax for setting up NAT on a two-interface firewall, the inside and the outside, is very simple. We'd say from configuration mode, NAT, and then in parentheses, the interface name where you have the clients who need to be translated. In this case, we're going to say inside. Then you close the paren and then put a NAT ID. I'm going to use NAT ID of 1, but you could use any number you want to, except for 0, because that's for identity NAT. And the key is that whatever you use for a NAT ID for your NAT statement, you want to match the same NAT ID in your global command coming up. So finishing the NAT statement, NAT, in parentheses, the word the keyword inside, NAT ID of 1 in this example, and then you'd specify the host or subnet that you want to allow or require to be translated. So if you had the 10 network on the inside, it'd be NAT inside 1, 10.0.0.0, and then a mask of 255.0.0.0. And that would say that anybody who sources traffic on the 10/8 network is required to be translated. Then on the outside interface, we'd go ahead and use the global command in configuration mode. The syntax is global, the keyword outside, that's the egress interface for this customer's traffic, and then the same NAT ID. So if in NAT inside 1, we'd use global outside 1, that matches those two up, and then we would go ahead and put in a range of addresses. For example, if the outside was the 20 network, we might have 20.0.0.10-20.0.0.100. And that would allow that range of IP addresses for network address translation with dynamic NAT. One other item that we really should bring up right here as well is, what about NAT control? How does that fit in? Well, NAT control is simple. If you have the command NAT-control on in configuration mode, that says to the firewall, all traffic going through the ASA needs to have a NAT rule. It could be a NAT zero, a static, NATs and globals, but it has to have a NAT rule. If you don't have NAT control on, by default, no NAT rules are required. But let me tell you a really big catch to that. Let's say you have a firewall with no NAT-control enabled. So no NAT control, traffic can just flow from higher to lower security, no problem. Here's the kicker. If you have a inside and an outside, and let's say DMZ1 interface, and the inside is at security level 100, the outside is at security level 0, and the DMZ is at security level 50, for traffic to flow from the inside to outside, let's say, for example, you did a NAT. NAT inside 1, and you specified the 10 network, and everybody's going to be translated there. Then you said global outside one, and you said keyword of interface for PAT. By the way, that's how we do port address translation. You could actually specify the keyword interface for the outside interface of the firewall for that translation to happen, or you could identify a single IP address, and that would do PAT on that one IP address, or you could put a range of IP addresses, as we talked about a moment ago. So from inside to outside, once you have your NAT statement saying people on the 10 network must be translated, the catch is that if you want to go from the inside to the DMZ, let's say the DMZ network is the 30 network. If you have logging enabled, which you should, and you have logging buffered set to 6, and you do a show of your logs, you'll see that there's a network address translation failure trying to go from the inside to the DMZ. And here's the catch. If you have a NAT rule that says the 10 network must be translated, it must be translated regardless of the egress or exit interface. So just be aware that even though NAT control is not on globally, once you have a NAT rule in place, you have to make sure you have egress NAT rules for that inside host going to anywhere. So you could fix that with NAT zero. Policy NAT zero. You could fix that with a static to the DMZ. You could put a global on the DMZ. But that's one of the things I find students get stuck on, is that they have a NAT statement. They're not aware of how the NAT rules fall into place, and they can't get a translation to the DMZ, and they drop points on that. Okay, one other caveat that I also want to talk about with NAT control, and this is huge too. Let's say we have 4 interfaces on our ASA. We have the inside, security level 100. We have the outside, security level 0. We have DMZ 1, and we'll say that's at security level 50. And let's say we have DMZ 2, which is at security level 0 also, just like the outside interface. Well, many of you have run into this. If you haven't, it's a great time to do it. If you have 2 interfaces at the same security level, by default, no traffic is allowed to flow between those 2 interfaces. So what do? We use the same security traffic permit interface command, and that allows all traffic to flow between those two, the DMZ2 and the outside interface, because they're both sitting at security level 0. Well, here's the kicker, and you might be asking, Keith, why are you talking about same security levels when you're focusing on NAT in this lesson? Well, here's why. If NAT control is on globally, and you have 2 interfaces like DMZ2 and the outside, which are both at the same security level, and you have same security traffic permit interface on, the 2 interfaces, don't have to have NAT rules for devices to communicate. So be aware of that. Now, the same rule applies. Once you tell the DMZ2 that it has to have some NAT rules with a NAT statement, then you will need to have a global on the outside or a static or something else for those 2 interfaces to communicate. But just simply be aware of the caveat of same security level interfaces, even if NAT control is on globally, do not need by default any NAT rules to communicate. So what have we covered so far? We've taken a look at dynamic NAT using NATs and globals. We've also taken a look at how we could do NATs and globals with PAT, with port address translation, by specifying not a range of IP addresses on the global, but a single IP address or the keyword of interface on the egress interface. Let's talk about statics for a moment, and then we'll migrate to static PAT. Statics are simple in their function. Static simply says, I want to map this IP address to that IP address. And the syntax is, let's take the DMZ, for example. Let's take our DMZ1 interface. Let's say we have a host at 30.0.0.10 on the DMZ1, and we want to map him to the outside to 20.0.0.10. So the DMZ is the 30 network, the outside interface is the 20 network. So to map our host on 30.0.0.10 to 20.0.0.10 from the DMZ to the outside, the syntax would be static, and then in parentheses, the interfaces. The interface where the client lives, which is the DMZ1, a comma, and then the interface of where we're mapping it to, which would be the outside, close paren. So source, destination, real interface where the device lives, mapped interface. And then for the actual IP addresses, this has been around for years. It's not my fault. But when you put in the IP addresses for the mapping, you put the global mapped address first, and that would be the 20.0.0.10 IP address off of the outside interface, space, And then you specify the real IP address of 30.0.0.10 for the real host. So it's interface, real interface name, mapped interface name. And then it's the mapped IP address, real IP address. It's kind of backwards. It's just one of those things you get to accept and love, but that is a static NAT. What we can also do with static NAT is we can also implement keywords like DNS, which will translate a DNS resolution from a global address to that DMZ address if there's a DNS query involved. We can also put on the embryonic limit for how many half-form sessions will be available through that translation. We can specify the maximum number of connections to the host with that translation. We can also specify no random sequence if we don't want the ASA to randomize the sequence numbers for that translation. Now, what if we want to do a translation for our DMZ server out to the outside, but we don't want to translate the entire IP address because we don't want the vulnerability of somebody trying to attack it on any possible port? Well, of course, we have access lists that we can implement on the outside interface, but we can do static port address translation as well and only map specific ports. And this is really handy. Let's say on our DMZ we had 5 servers. We had a male server, a female server, HTTP server, that was a joke, FTP, and some other protocol that we want to run, maybe a telnet server, heaven forbid. What we could do is we could take those 5 servers on the DMZ network and map specific ports to the same global IP address. So when clients came to that global IP address from the outside to a specific port, that traffic would be untranslated to the correct host on the inside. And that's another key point, too, that you deserve to be aware of. When we set up our NAT translations, there's really two processes going on. There's the translation for when the mapped addresses, the clients, the servers themselves go out to the world. And there's the untranslation as traffic tries to reach those servers who have that translation set up for them. So most of the traffic that's initiated to web servers, to email servers, and so forth, is untranslated as it tries to reach the server in question. When servers initiate traffic, that's when we have translations that happen. So translations and untranslations, or undo translations, as Cisco sometimes refers to them. But let's take a look at how we do static NATs. I'm going to have you visualize with me with our DMZ network once again. We've got the 30.0.0.0 network on our DMZ1 interface. And on the outside, we have the 20 network on the outside interface. And what we want to do is we want to map. Let's map FTP traffic. Well, let's pick a simple one. Let's map HTTP traffic, just that one port, to our server at 30.0.0.10. So any other ports on the outside won't be mapped to our server, just port 80. The syntax is very similar to what it was previously, except we're going to add the keyword TCP and we're going to add the port. So the syntax would be static, and then in parentheses, DMZ1, comma, outside, close paren. So that's the real interface where the server is and the mapped interface. And then instead of putting the mapped IP address, we're going to add the keyword TCP, then the mapped IP address of 20.0.0.10. And then we're going to specify the port number. In this case, if it's HTTP, we'll just put an 80 there. That'll work. We could also put the keyword or the key name of HTTP, and that would work as well. So we have static, inside, or DMZ1 to outside, TCP, the global mapped address of 20.0.0.10, space, 80 for port 80. And then we're going to specify the real IP address on the DMZ network of 30.0.0.10, space, and then we'll put the real port of 80 again. Now, only that port is mapped from the outside interface to our DMZ, and any other ports won't have any translations. There won't be any connectivity. And right here, let me point out something. Without some practice, this is not going to be happy for you if you walk into a lab environment and have to set this up without having done it first. It does take a few hours of practice on each of these technologies to make sure you are comfortable with how it works and know how to verify it and troubleshoot it. Let me tell you the gotcha, or one of the gotchas, with doing port address translation with statics. Let's say, hypothetically, that we did exactly what we talked about in these prior examples in a live ASA. We did a static, just a normal static from our server to the outside, and then we did another static, with the same global IP address, but one that maps the ports to a different server. So we have two servers on the DMZ. One is a hard-coded static, and the other is a port redirection. Those two are compatible. When you put in the port address static, it's going to specify, warning, this overlaps with a previous global. It's not an error message, just a warning. No problem whatsoever. If you do a show run static, it will show you those in the configs, and you know which one it's going to put first? It's going to put the port address translation static first, and then it's going to put your normal static below it. So it all looks good, went in no problem, but you know what? You try to hit that port address translation, it doesn't fly. So the solution for that is make sure you clear your xlates every time you change your static rules. You're in a lab environment. You're not in a production environment, so feel free to clear xlates. Clear localhost is also a good one to be aware that it exists. But let me show you how to fix the port address translation that's put in second. Even though it shows up first in the config, the ASA version 8.03 and 8.04, which is at the time of this recording, both of which are being used in the lab, it has an issue with the order you put them in, not just the order they show up in the config. So to make the port address translation work in conjunction with another global static that's using the same global address, you would need to either save your configs and reload the ASA, I kid you not, or do a show run static and then do a clear config static, clear xlate, and then copy and paste the statics you had in your show run from a moment earlier and paste them back in. When you paste them back in, they'll go in the correct order and they will work. So just be aware that the pyramid for learning, the 90%, if you will, at the base is knowing the technology, understanding how it works and practicing with it. And the little tips and tricks I throw in could be lifesavers, but they're only lifesavers if you have the foundation already in place. No one is going to pass the lab just on sheer luck. It's going to be based on a whole bunch of practice, a whole bunch of knowledge, and then on top of that, hopefully some guidelines as far as some weird behaviors that you can overcome in the middle of a lab if that comes up for you. All right, so that is static NAT, static PAT, and let's go ahead and take a look at NAT Zero. It's like Coke Zero commercial. NAT Zero next. There's a few ways that we can get around NAT. One is don't enable NAT control and don't put any NAT statements or statics in your config and poof, you are not required to use NAT. However, with NAT control enabled or with NAT statements already in place, if you want to not translate, there's three options for basically NAT zero. One is the NAT zero command, which says NAT space in parentheses, the interface where your client lives or where he's coming from, and then basically specify zero, implementing that you're not going to use any kind of NAT or you're not going to translate him to a different address. And then you can specify an IP address, a range of IP addresses, and that's how it works. The other way is you could use the static command. Static command works great. You could say static inside, comma, outside, if that's where you want to map it to, in parentheses. And then you could specify 10.0.0.11 as the mapped address and 10.0.0.11 as the real address. Press enter, and you have a static mapping the inside host to its same address on the outside, and that will work. That is another way of bypassing NAT. So we have the dynamic NAT zero command. We have a static from itself to itself. And the other option is by using NAT zero with a conditional option, basically putting on an access list. With an access list, you can specify only the conditions on which NAT zero will be implemented. And that's a perfect situation for an IPsec tunnel that's going across the network where only IPsec encrypted traffic should bypass NAT. One little caveat there, if you have an access list for NAT zero, you can specify ports, but NAT zero doesn't pay attention to port numbers. So if you do a NAT zero with an access list, just be prepared to specify IP addresses that are involved and not any ports for NAT zero in conjunction with an access list. So let's kick it up a notch and take a look at some additional options above and beyond the plain Jane port address translation with statics. Let's do dynamic NAT, but make it policy NAT. With policy NAT, we're simply specifying the conditions on which NAT will happen. And we reference this with NAT zero with an access list. But here's the simplicity of it. If I have a host on the inside network, and that's the 10 network, and I've got a server out there in cyberspace, a perfect example is you need to connect to a partner on the internet. And when you connect to that partner, you need to show up as a specific IP address. So what you could do is you could create an access list, my list, call it whatever you want, permit IP. And when you specify the source and destination networks or hosts, it's going to be from the client who's being translated. So if your client is at 10.0.0.1 on the inside, and when he goes out to 20.0.0.2, a host on the outside, your access list should say access list, ACL1, for example, permit IP 10.0.0.1 with a 32-bit mask, if you want to narrow it down that far, going out to 20.0.0.2 with a 32-bit mask. And that simply identifies traffic from the translated device to the destination. Now, how do you put that all together? You say NAT inside 1 for NAT ID 1 and say access list and then name the access list that you created. And that NAT will only be in effect if the traffic is sourced from the correct identified host in the access list and destined to the correct host in that access list. And then on the outside, of course, you'd have to have global outside, match the NAT ID, and you could put it in a single IP address or a range of IP addresses. So it's really a conditional NAT based on the source and destination in your access list working or being matched correctly. And so you could have 5 different hosts you'd want to reach, create 5 different access lists, and you could be translated into a separate IP address for each one of those destinations based on your policy-based NAT. Very cool stuff. That same process of using the access list for policy NAT could also be extended to say, or to include rather, the actual ports. So if I'm connecting to this remote destination from my source IP address and I'm going to port 80, then you could be part of this NAT group 1, for example. And you could have a NAT inside 2 that uses a different access list, and NAT inside 3 with a different access list. So you could extend that with policy-based NAT using port numbers, but just remember with NAT 0, with policy-based NAT 0, you can't use the access list with port numbers for NAT 0 because NAT 0 doesn't pay attention to those port numbers. In addition to using policy with NAT statements, we can also do policy statics, where it's only conditional based on the match of the access list. And this comes in really handy if, for example, you have one server on your DMZ, but you want that one server on your DMZ to be mapped to 2 global addresses. How do you pull that one off? Well, the secret to that is pretty simple. We create 2 access lists. One access list that says permit traffic from the real IP address of that server to anybody, and a second access list that says permit the IP address of that server to anybody. The same exact contents, but 2 different ACLs. And then when you do your statics, let's say we call those access lists ACL1 and ACL2. Again, in that ACL, it's from the perspective of the host you're doing the translation for. So if his host IP address is 30.0.0.10, the ACL, both of them, would say permit IP from host 30.0.0.10 going to anybody. And then we'd say static DMZ outside the global mapped address of, let's say, .20.0.0.10, and then access list ACL1. Repeat, up arrow key, static DMZ to outside, and then we'd specify the second global address, which might be 20.0.0.21 space access list ACL2. And that is how you have one host with a one real IP address mapped to 2 global addresses. We're going to use policy statics with 2 different access lists, even though the access list had the exact same contents. That's the only way to get it in the config. We've covered a lot of ground in this chapter. We took a look at the concept of NAT, how it operates, how to configure NAT in its various flavors with dynamic NAT, dynamic PAT using a single IP address, policy-based NATs and PATs based on a access list, policy-based statics and normal statics. We also talked about NAT zero. One thing that we probably ought to talk about too before we close this session is how do we verify and troubleshoot? Pretty simple, actually. The ASA has a great command. It's called show NAT. And ShowNat is going to show you all the translations that it has in place and how many hits it's had on each one of those. So you could do, for example, a clear NAT counters, enter, and then show NAT, and they should all be zeroed out. Then you can send some traffic through the firewall and check it out, see if it works. So if you have a host or a router on the inside of your firewall, and it's supposed to be caught up in a NAT rule, you could telnet, for example, to a device outside the firewall, type in who to see who's connected, and it should show you the IP address. It should be that translated address. And again, on the firewall, if you do a show NAT, it will show you all of the translations that are currently in process. You could also do a show XLate. That's a great one to show you what is real as far as the translations are concerned on that ASA. So that concludes our NAT discussion. Our next topic is ACLs, access control lists. They're not just for breakfast anymore. They have lots of uses, and I'll see you in the next audio lesson for access lists.